And that's why we partly because the uni is no longer an identity marker itself, but also partly though because this is such a significant time of life, we're really pushing for the language of young adults as being a really important one for us to explain who we're ministering to, but also urging churches and denominations to have a strategy for, because there's a lot of things in this transition into adulthood that in our culture especially happens at the school leaver point or a bit before if you do apprenticeships, but, you know, that kind of process. But there's enough things that happen in this next little window that make it worth having in a focused interest in. Yeah, so let's chat a bit about this. Like, what are some, let's talk a bit more about what's the value. I mean, obviously it's a thing because we're seeing these young adults groups pop up as well that seem to be getting traction in our city and so on. Thoughts about it? What's some useful things about the category? What's some unhelpful things about the category? You know, all these kinds of things.
I think it is useful because one thing is that it does mark a particular group, a particular transition moment that you go creche, primary, high school or whatever. You have all these categories in these moments and you group them by age and you group them sort of by development. And there is in our society you're 18 to 24 year old or 25 year old. Like that's the way society understands that to be young adult. And that is a particular stage and step in life. And just biologically at the age of 25, that's when your brain finishes its full development as well. So you've got that going on a little bit in the background. So I think it's helpful to
that's about the time a guy starts to go, maybe I can't jump that far. I shouldn't eat that extra thing.
That energy drink, maybe not.
Maybe other people do exist, things like this.
And so that is usually the point where university and study and that kind of thing, it has wrapped up or is wrapping up as well. So that's their next educational, and then because of that biological, but then at about the age of 25 as well, because of all those things, you now move from being a dependent child or a dependent adult in a bunch of ways still is on the whole to now being independent. Like you've got the job, you've got money coming in, you're in a different rhythm and pattern, you're facing different challenges, what you can say yes and no to changes as well. And at that point, there's 7 years from an 18-year-old as well. That's like quite a slab of time. And again, that's sort of similar to the primary age and whatever we go, there's this slab of age and then there's this slab of age and there's this slab of age. So I think because of the social, biological, just the rhythms and patterns of life, education, like all that stuff, it seems to be a good kind of stamp to mark that out. So I think that's some advantage that it does categorize and name that season of life well.
And that's worthwhile. Even if uni is not essential, it actually is still worthwhile recognizing that group for what it is. There's some needs, some developmental changes, some enough shared experience perhaps, and enough needed input and guidance perhaps to make it worthwhile still having a plan for, even if you're not in a university town at all. it still has some value to it. And there is another way of just defining young adults, which some churches have opted for and sometimes society speaks about as well, which is a definition which is basically not adolescent and not middle-aged. Basically another way you could describe that category would be early adulthood or something like that. So it's not so much the young adult or emerging adult, which could be something like the 17 to 23 or 18 to 25, something like that. But instead, it's basically not middle-aged, early adulthood in a broader sense. And there's some sense in which that is meaningful in the sense that by the time you're middle-aged, there are again biological changes. There's much more statistical likelihood that things around housing, family, coupled them or not, it will be in place, the career trajectory will be in place in a whole different way. There's, in a sense, new transitions you're beginning to have to deal with.
Yeah.
When you start to hit early middle age and so on. So there's some sense in realizing that's a time when there will still be an interest in forming new friendships, looking for new relationships, changing job or defining who you, you know, so that's the flux. And probably our culture in general, that is delayed a bit more. So you're more likely to find someone a bit older. I mean, even into our age in 30s and early 40s, you're having people still thinking of themselves as kind of liking to think of themselves as young in various ways. You know, there's that interesting thing that adulting was this sort of millennial kind of joke phrase to capture how I just don't feel like an adult still. So there's reasons why you go, actually, yeah, that does prolong in ways. And if people are pairing up later and delaying certain milestones later, partly for economic reasons and whatever. So that's another category. We've all got pretty strong opinions about why we don't think that's the most useful ministry segmenting category. Maybe, Christine, you want to dive in on that? What are some thoughts on limitations to that broader definition of, you know, young adulthood, ranging really right up to anything after adolescence and before middle age as a ministry segmenting target? What are some limitations to that?
Well, like you mentioned before, there are certain milestones that we often associate with different levels of maturity and growth, decision making capabilities, recognition that some of those decisions were really good, or recognition that some of those decisions needed to go back and be retweaked, or they were learning opportunities. Or I learned a new phrase recently. What is it? FLEARN. It's a new Gen Z phrase, but it's a core value that the emerging generation has. I've learned through failing. Please let me try. Please let me do something and fail. Don't try and put cushions around me so that I don't fail, but let me try something new, go big or go home. And if I fail, well, that was a learning opportunity. I know better next time not to do that thing.
What was the word?
Learn, fail through learning. No, okay. Learn through failing. That's one. Learn.
I learned with an F at the start.
Yeah,
gotcha.
But I think we can see some trends also in the spiritual formation of this age group, but it's also possibly quite different from previous generations. What seems to be consistent, and I think all of us kind of go through the stage, especially if we grew up as a Christian. There comes a point when you do gain independence, but if we're still living at home, you know, with our siblings, our younger siblings and our parents, that might be extended a little bit later. But all of us at some point in our young adulthood, when we reach that stage of independence, where we're no longer daily influenced 90% by those we grew up with, even if it comes to our pastor or youth group leader, Sunday school teacher, growth group leader, when we're off on our own, realizing that we make real life choices that affect our financial budget, but also our spiritual trajectory. If you never get to the point where you actually own your own faith and ask yourself the hard questions of, is the faith of my parents, my family, my pastor, my Sunday school teacher, is that actually my own faith? Can I actually, as an adult, a 21-year-old, sign on the dotted line and say, yes, this is still what I believe and this is still what I intend to practice for the rest of my life? We got to make those opportunities for our young adults. We can't put those cushions around them. And in some sense, we have to be okay with our young adults flirting, even in the spiritual formation space.
Yeah, I think it means checking out from the faith and checking back in rather than just keeping them in the building at whatever cost.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of risks with that is that you can hide in that category. And so by that, I mean,
this is if we extend it too old. Is that where we're
going to get into? Yeah. Okay. So as far as like owning your faith personally goes, you can often just remain owning the tradition or the group of friends. And so you can kind of hide actually what's spiritually, what depth is really there. And then I think linked to that as well is that you can just stay younger and more immature as well, in the faith and even just in life as well. You can just be given a whole bunch of permissions to not do things, or not be given extra responsibility because the church or whatever goes, oh no, they're just the young people. But it's like, oh, but like I'm 27 and married or something like that, you know. Actually, you can be withholding the development and growth of your people, I think, by making this category too big. You sort of can keep people, I think, younger. So that's a bit of a risk, I think.
It's almost there's a risk in both directions, in a sense that you could miss out on really maximizing the important transitional and social potentials of emerging adults, school leavers, what we would call young adults, 17 to, you know, whatever it is, 23, 24, 25. You miss out on really focusing that if you're also meeting the needs of two older, broader a group, that you miss out actually on the benefit of really targeted segmentation. As you said, Andy, if it's 18 to 25, that's already 7 years. That's heaps. That's a huge cat segment. And so to broaden that any further, you run the illusion of no longer actually targeting. Really, very
I think just jumping on that, like one thing, this might not quite be a fair comparison, but there's a very different thing at my kids' church to the prep kid and the year six kid. Like, they're in the primary, but they are in two different worlds with two different needs. And that's exactly like the 18 and like, or the 17 and the 25, they're at those different ends and they're really in very different places.
Much more 17 and 29.
enormously.
And so it's worth going, that doesn't necessarily serve the emerging adult to be trying to run a ministry that meets all the needs of everyone from 17 to 30. I think that needs to be questioned for the benefit of this really crucial turning point. But also for this other group, it is helpful to go, probably whatever it is, 25 to 30, maybe there are some set needs there, but they're actually, I would suggest, actually quite diffuse. In previous ages, people would know about young workers ministries, singles ministries, young families ministries. There'd be these. And actually, they all have legitimate function. Whether you need ministries for them all, that's a question. But they are. It shows that they're quite different than experiences. Like a young worker is wrestling with one package of experiences. If they're leaving learning behind and really going into career building mode, particularly. That's one thing. Young family, obviously the sleepless nights, juggling kids, you know, 9 p.m. becomes late in your mind, all that kind of stuff. Loneliness in different ways, all that kind of stuff. Looking for a partner that you'd love to have and not finding one is a different experience again, or coming to terms with maybe not finding one, all those experiences. They're a whole different set of needs and interests and experiences. They may have a place in terms of ministry purpose, maybe not. And I guess that's an important thing to notice, that there are needs there going on that the people in that time of flux, which is often can be quite a depressing time, actually, when you're going, oh, this life isn't all, my job isn't all I hoped it would be, or I didn't find a partner, or having a kid didn't solve my problems, or I can't get pregnant, or there's so many things in there that actually that there's different pastoral needs. And the risk is using a young adult's ministry structure to meet needs that are actually kind of more personal, pastoral, social, just the job of church, you know, and maybe instead go, yeah, we do need to care for the younger adults who are, rather than devote a separate ministry strategic silo to it. But also, as Andy said, there's an opposite potential thing of going, by that stage, you really do have potential leaders. And to put them in the category with 17 and 18-year-olds as just the kind of kids, the young adults, the youngins, you're missing the opportunity to go, really, you know, that 25-year-old, 26-year-old is as much an adult as a 46-year-old. It's time to start actually getting them involved in the life of the church and empowering them, getting the older people to make room for them and get used to being led by older Gen Zers and so on. All that kind of stuff. So there's actually there comes, what's interesting, I think, is that if you go back a while, Another way these things were often met were just by evening services. They didn't have a midweek young adults group or young workers group, but you did like have an evening service that would tend to have people gravitate towards it who didn't need the morning time slot for other often children related reasons, you know, or getting not wanting to drive at night reasons, you know. So it would segment a bit that way and tend to have a lot of students, not middle-aged or singles, and often then empty nesters as well, who went, hey, my kids are grown up and actually I've got new energy and capacity and I would rather mentor some uni students than serve on creche. And so they actually then opt to kind of come in and be the aunties and uncles in the evening service because of the ministering opportunities. So in some ways, it's, you know, by creating these young adults groups, we're maybe missing out on the potential in the larger church dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think I would just probably just add it with these things. A risk is how are you siloing? Like, are you silo offing groups from the church? It is another part of it as well. I think that's a good thing to consider. How integrated are your various age groups, and how well do they integrate into, I think, the wider church? By that I mean, you can keep a group almost siloed together, because actually in the bigger church you haven't created good transitions and integration systems, so that it can drive from, oh well, if we don't kind of keep them in that group, well, we might lose them from church, so let's just keep extending this group out so that they'll keep hanging out, keep being mates, and they'll keep being safe, and they'll keep staying. And actually going, are you accidentally siloing them off and you're trying to address a different issue by doing that? So I think thinking about what are those discipleship steps in your church, and how are you doing that well? Yeah, so I think that can be one possible scenario that I think is worth interrogating, like if you're a minister. But there's also lots of good reasons why that might not be the case whatsoever. Yep.
So an example of something that a church can do really well in this area is if they have an evening service that they've targeted, like, hey, this works really well for singles, our aunties and uncles who want to invest in young people, those who are newly married, double income, including those people in the leadership team in planning for and integrating the creation of maybe an evening service, or going forward, decision making that what might make this experience unique to the morning service. How do we welcome people uniquely in the evening service? If you're including the young people as it's a great leadership pipeline strategy, that if they are on the leadership team of the evening service, when their life situation changes, let's say kids come into the mix, and they need, it just works better for them to come to the morning service. They've got that experience to add, to bring new life to the morning experience too, and potentially on leadership teams, elder boards, boards of management, parish councils, and to think about it in terms of a pipeline like that, rather than we just have these set few people who are on the elder board who are only allowed to make those decisions. You're cutting out, like, eventually when you need a new elder and you put the word out, no one feels equipped or qualified because they've never been allowed to be in that space before.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I've just scrolling through our list of things we wanted to cover, and we've covered a lot of ground, and I hope it's been helpful, and we'll parcel this up in different ways to get out some of these different bits down the track. But maybe the one thing we haven't hit on yet, and it's a good way to finish actually, is if things with UTAS are going to stay diffuse for a long time, if it's really no longer AFES ministry, Uni Fellowship of Christians ministry as it used to be, what you know, and if churches are, you know, there are at least some churches, you know, making a good go of ministering to this demographic, what is, if any, the additional value and benefit of an inter-church and actually inter-denominational ministry like the Uni Fellowship of Christians? What contribution do we still feel we can make? I mean, Christine's talked about the people falling between the cracks. We can meet that need, yes. Are there other needs that there remains value, even perhaps for the churches who are doing a good job at this at the local level with their young adults groups? What place for us in this next, whatever it is, 10 years?
I mean, I think as uni workers, we and the organization we work for, we're specialists in that we can provide a resource in leadership development and evangelism. We can create those spaces and times which churches can use, can fill with their people, and they get all the benefit of our time and energy, so that their people can grow and mature, and that's that kind of parachurch, right? The para, the next, the alongside, helping and supporting the local church, and that's what we want to do, and we love doing, and that's great. So that specialist input, I think, is very useful. And then I think within that kind of specialist input, as that kind of happens, we're pulling from all these different denominations and individuals, and that will create a rich crossover of social groups, of theological thinking, of experience, of Christian and those who don't identify as Christian. And that's just really lovely. And though when that happens, people love it and they have a great time. And there is that cheesy, you're better together element there. And that is just a learning experience in itself by being surrounded by all these different people and kind of learning together and learning to love well together as well. So that would be, I think, is two where it's just enriching in that way.
My local church has just gone through a stage of speaking with our members and reestablishing what our vision is, because we've kind of reached that, you know how churches, when they reach 80, you kind of need to like, hey, let's make sure we're all on the same page again. But we're at 220 and it's kind of a similar transition period. Let's remind ourselves what the main thing is. The main thing, are we doing that well? Where might we be lacking? And as a result, we've collated some really, really, really great content. One of the ways that our elders are thinking of this could potentially help us with hiring our next staff member, if we've got someone who is regularly responsible for the preaching of the word on Sunday and overseeing the Wednesday service, and then we've got someone who's doing sort of family discipleship type stuff, this conversation is helping us look at what this might look like, but that might be like a 5 to 10 years away thing. What I was seeing in those conversations is the role that Uni Fellowship might play in between that time. For example, one of the desires that came up was we would really love some training on particular topics. Well, like you said, Andy, we're specialists and our time is dedicated to teaching and training our students at a particular tertiary level. And so we can integrate some of this content that we're already delivering our students, and we can partner with local churches and delivering that type of training. So it's not becoming something that the church is looking at our elders and our ministers and saying, like, you do more. Like, the elders and ministers can be looking at their partners, their gospel partnerships in the community, and saying, okay, I am physically unable to meet this perceived need in my congregation. Who in our ecosystem can I bring on side to minister to my people in this way? We can be that.
Yeah, it's working out. You don't need to do everything together, like this kind of endless, let's do more unity for everything. Unity is always better. That's not so much that, is it? You find, when is it useful to do more stuff together? When does it bless and enrich the whole in some meaningful way? And yeah, training is clearly one of those. We've talked a lot about this transition time. And I think just as people recognize the value in combined large high school ministry work or youth, like primary school camps, over the summer camps and those kinds of things, we go, oh, some extra strategic investment there makes sense to do as in a concerted, combined way. I think we've made a good case that there's some key issues to this emerging adult category that's especially valuable for evangelism, for raising up leaders, for building community, for cementing faith, all that stuff. And so to give some extra attention there to do it together, I think, yeah, is a strong case. And one of the things we've been pondering, especially in this season, post-COVID season for UTAS, is just the desire we have, the prayer we have, having seen this ministry in years gone by, to make sure that we help our current young adults and the emerging adults opt for more rather than enough. And so even if you're a church that has a pretty good, you know, young adults group, 20, 30 people, that's great. But imagine if together with other young adults groups in Hobart, they could sometimes enjoy 60, 70, 80, 90 people. Why would you opt for 20, 30, that's enough, when we could all enjoy 60, 70, 80? Why not opt for more? Like, what's the downside? You know, so that's even with a church that feels like it's got a good thing going. Actually, in a sense, funnily, how much more could you then energize everything? I see that with, say, like with EV Church and its involvement with Reach Australia. EV Church is well and truly self-contained and happy and could do a whole, it could have its EV Church planting network and consultancy service if it wanted. But instead it said, well, how much better would it be to share the love across denominations, across the country, in between churches, and even with other bigger churches, and do something that gives outward rather than just brands the EV flag or the FIC denominational flag. And so that same spirit, right? Yep. That there's just how great a gift to give to our young adults, especially when their uni experience is narrower and more fragmented. And so they're not getting all that in the uni thing, like Christine said at the beginning, on the lawn, mingling with people from different faculties. They're getting less of that at uni. How much more reason then to opt more? And similarly, when it comes to training or evangelism or ministry, if our guys are doing a bit of evangelism with our church and a bit of ministry with our church, that's cool. But I guess we've seen, haven't we, and experienced ourselves, you know, how great it is to do a whole lot of stuff when you're young, finding your gifts and got lots of connections. You get to try your hand at a range of ministries, get stretched, and you flurn as you go. And multiple contact points for evangelism, not just the church program, but the parachurch program. And it all works together in synergy. Why not opt for more? And that's part of our heavy hearts, is when we go, oh, like that, even the ones who've got good stuff, we go, oh, it's just that. Wow. You know, I guess we've seen how much young adults can get out of this time of life, but sometimes it can be a little bit of a bummer, how little they're content with in the 2020s. So we're kind of saying, with evangelism, with training, with ministry, you know, we'd love as a city and a state to opt for more rather than be satisfied with enough. Yeah,
it's not enough for our school leaver young woman. She's graduated from here 12. Like, what can we do with her in order to keep her in the faith? I know, we'll stick her in the youth group as a youth leader, so that she can then benefit the year sevens, year eights, you know, the emerging young adults, and we'll have ticked that box. She's got spiritual formation and development that, you know, she needs addressing, and opportunities to grow her in a faith beyond that youth group level. And we need to be thinking strategically about what that looks like uniquely for our 18-year-olds plus. And if a church isn't in the capacity to have a dedicated ministry to that age group, Well, why fret about it and say, oh, well, we can't do it when we've got Uni Fellowship who is specialized and we're begging you to bring your young people to us. It's not just one more thing that you have to do when you've got us that are begging for you to send us your young people, and we will grow and stretch them in ways that are suitable for their age and stage of spiritual development.
Yeah. And I mean, this relates to ministry apprentices and interns that, again, like Christine's saying, keen for ministry. So we give them an internship or an apprenticeship role. Brilliant. That's great. That's really excellent, proactive investing. And here's the opt for more, for them to both benefit from everything you do with your training and maybe your what chosen training framework or denominational framework gives, to also say to them, hey, as part of your training, we'd love you to connect with a specialist mm-hmm. group. And be exposed to all these other practitioners and opportunities and conference input. Man, I look in on that and go, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you greenhouse, fertilize as much as you could? Opt for more with your trainees.
I think another angle, which is just the background reality of the Uni Fellowship ministry, the city that we live in, the state that we're in, is that UTAS is the only university, and however diffused it is the educational, multicultural, political, social hub of the city, that domestically we have 10,000 students, of basically all of those don't know Jesus. And as far as going, what is a strategic, necessary local mission field for our churches, of which our young people are in, that's a pretty high priority in my mind to go, wow, there's this space, there's this access to this, there's these people who want to reach this. And there's a high chance that your church is probably within a 5K radius of one of the buildings, at least, that becomes for us Hobartians actually just a really important mission field. I want to see people be saved. I want to see young people interacting, socializing, growing, maturing. I want to see all of that taking place. But I also want to see this mission field of all these people that don't know Jesus being touched somehow by these young people.
And we're seeing the best way to do that is tap it through networks. They're not going to tap it through a table at one of these many eight different sites. We'll keep doing a bit of that, but we're going to tap it mainly through networks. And the thicker a network of overlapping groups, friendship groups, study groups, mm-hmm. social groups, sports groups, camping teams, the thicker that network, the better reach and permission we'll be able to have. Absolutely. Without a doubt. Yeah.
And that's what's crucial about that is those relational networks and that age and stage identifying as a young emerging adult, a young adult, that in my mind is the new place of UTAS. When you can no longer rely on, or we've just got massive question marks over the physical place of where the campus is, what becomes reliable or where students are or what it means to be a student is in this relational age group space. And so that is the kind of new mission field that we're primarily trying to reach, rather than trying to give out some hot cross buns or sausages from a barbecue to about 12 people across an hour and a half.
At Sandy Bay campus. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that all then requires the devil's in the details in terms of then bridging these gaps with all these issues we've said requires a whole lot more proactivity from us, intentionality, us parents, the keen switched on young adults who already get it all and are taking a lead, pastors, youth group leaders, all of us need to be proactive in doing our bit pretty consistently, actually. Like this is a discipline, not just to advertise once or twice. It requires work. I mean, we haven't even mentioned how social media has kind of decayed for this age group. I mean, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But yeah, anyway, so it's not even really you can reach them through Facebook as easily as you could 10 years ago. Facebook's where your auntie and uncle are. We need more intentionality, absolutely. And part of that is actually some planning things. Often we undercut things, not by our intention, but the plans we make. Double booking is an obvious one. There's a whole bunch of those things, aren't there? Over scheduling our church stuff, so there's just no room, really, that the young adults feel so busy, they don't have any space for any more diversity. Yeah, so there's a bunch of those things where, again, we just need to be really working at that together proactively to bring this about. And so, yeah, anyway, that's that's the challenge. A whole other conversation could be listing the, 10 to 20 things that we can do to implement this in practice. But at the very least, this 90 minutes has been a pretty good conversation starter, I hope. Final thoughts, Christine? Anything you want to add before we sign off?
We love Jesus, and the reason why we're devoting our time and energy during the week is to help your students grow in their love for Jesus and give them the confidence to be able to talk about him in meaningful ways and real, authentic ways with their classmates, with their, remember, they're working 2 to 3 jobs, so with their colleagues at work and with their family at home and their siblings and their neighbors. And we would love, love, love for meaningful partnerships to come alongside of us to make that a possibility.
Yeah. Andy, final thoughts?
I don't have any final thoughts. Yeah, I want to see all those people reached and saved, and I don't want our young adults just to stay in their cohorts, in their little tribes and their little gangs and in their little worlds, and I want to see them reaching out and being well supported and enabled to thrive in that way, so that we welcome more into the kingdom.
If we're praying that God will send people out of our churches into the mission field to the nations, why not start with our young people and pray and send our young people to the mission field of the UTAS campus and start there?
Yeah.
My final thought is, anyone who's listened this far, is we've talked for 90 minutes, that this is sufficiently complex and it's continuous change. It is what they call a paradigm shift in terms of thinking differently about what ministry will look like compared to perhaps previously with campus ministry. And so if you're really on board with this stuff, I reckon probably a second listen or we'll happily have conversations with you in some other format. But actually, it will be sufficiently easy to forget, not fully grasp, wrestle with how to implement this stuff. Yeah, it is mind-blowing to us, just the change we've experienced and the things we've had to think through this last 5 years. So I guess that would be my final thought, is we've put this work into today because we thought it was worth really raising with you. And we'd love you to keep engaging with it either through this repeat content or with us directly, because we think it's really important and it's really complex. So let's keep chewing it over together prayerfully and with that mission heart that Andy and Christine have left us with.